This is Dylan FM, the podcast that goes deep into the work and world of Bob Dylan. If you love Dylan, you're in the right place with your host, Craig Danieloff.
Even amongst the greatest of all Bob Dylan songs, the Tangled Up in Blues, the It's All Right Ma, the I'm Not There, and whatever else you might put on that list, Blind Willie McTell stands apart. It feels big, important, and mysterious. Listening to it is a pleasure and a challenge because it feels like you just can't get your head around it. There are lots of Dylan songs that confuse or confound, but this one pulls you to try, intellectually, emotionally, maybe even spiritually. Although full grasp seems always a little more than out of reach. The fact that Dylan had this locked up in a pile of unreleased tapes for almost a decade is one of those facts that also taunts us. How could that be? I think that if you want to understand Bob Dylan and fully appreciate him, and to the degree it's possible to even get near understanding him, you have to try and see things once in a while from his point of view. I'm not saying that's easy or even possible, and sometimes he intentionally lies, but other times I think he tells us the truth. In 2006, Dylan talked about Blind Willie McTell, and he was asked why it was left behind. Most likely it was a demo, he said, probably showing the musicians how it should go. It was never fully developed. I never got around to completing it. There wouldn't have been any other reason for leaving it off the record. It's like taking a painting by Monet or Picasso, going to his house and looking at half-finished paintings, grabbing it and selling it to people who are, quote-unquote, Picasso fans. So you're Bob Dylan, you write hundreds of songs, sometimes dozens and dozens in a year, you record hundreds of them and thousands of takes, plus, of course, do over 3,000 shows on the road. You know what you have in mind, what you're capable of, and you don't always have the time or the patience to reach it. Sometimes it's not working and you just move on. The fact that Dylan left this one behind for a while is part of the story. But the fact that he brought it back, he ultimately released 3 different takes of it. He played it live 226 times, tells us that he came around. He realized the mistake, he appreciated the song, and he shared it forcefully with the world. Of course, we're not Bob Dylan. So when this thing dropped in 1993, if you were there, you know it was a sonic boom even among all the amazing discoveries in the first bootleg series box. Yes, of course, a bootleg recording had circulated for years, although that's a relatively small number of us who had heard that. It's now been over 30 years since the official release, yet the power and the mystery remain. The song is one of those that's just as impactful when you hear it now as it was the first time you heard it. And even for the many of us that have listened hundreds or thousands of times, the mystery largely remains. In Song and Dance Man Volume 2, Michael Gray dives deep into Blind Willie McTell, the song and the man. And today, we're talking to him all about it. As always, what you're about to hear is maybe 1% of what the book chapter reveals, although check our blog and Substack and there's going to be an excerpt from this great chapter. But as always, I really recommend you grab the book at Amazon, there's a link in the show notes, to learn all about it. This is just an amazing chapter. Also in the show notes are links to a new playlist called Blind Willie McTell, The Song and the Man, featuring the Dylan versions, great covers, and many of the Blind Willie McTell songs that Michael mentions in this episode. But enough of all of this. Let's talk to Michael Gray about Blind Willie McTell.
Blind Willie McTell is no roaring primitive and no Robert Johnson-esque devil-dealing womanizer. He didn't lose his sight in a juke joint brawl or hopping a freight train. He didn't escape into music from behind a mule plow in the Delta. He didn't die violently or young. Instead, blind from youth, but never behaving as if it were a handicap, this intelligent, articulate man became an adept professional singer and 12-string guitar player who traveled widely and talked his way into an array of recording sessions. He never achieved a hit record, but he became, as a live performer and a man, one of the most widely known and well-loved figures in and around Georgia, working clubs and car parks, playing to blacks and whites, tobacco workers and college kids, Blind Willie McTell, human jukebox, and local hero, enjoyed a modest career and an independent life.
All right, Michael, welcome back. We're at another peak here, following the great Joker Man with something that most of our listeners know you as a Bob Dylan author, and you've written much else, but one of those is a huge work on Blind Willie McTell. So we're deep in your sweet spot today. You know, he's almost a metaphor in the song, right? Most people don't come to the song knowing him at all or very much, and it almost doesn't matter because Dylan's creates
him. Absolutely. Absolutely. That's how I came to it. I mean, when I heard the Dylan song bootlegged long before it was officially released. And when I heard it, I naturally wondered, well, how does Blind Willie McTell sing the blues, or indeed sing anything else? And I was rather stereotypically expecting a kind of Howling Wolf type figure, you know? And actually, when I heard him, he sounded, he had more of a sweet tone like Roy Orbison than Howling Wolf. So that was the first thing. And I was so intrigued that I just wanted to research him. I mean, I wanted to find out what was known about him as a man and his life and his times. And what I found was a shockingly small amount of stuff that had ever been published, which is why I got into the business of writing the book. The book is not only his story, but the story of getting his story. And that's because it was so difficult to get. I couldn't just go to somebody else's book or an encyclopedia of the blues or any of that sort of thing. All I could do was find out where he was born as best I could and take it from there. But luckily, he was not only untypical of a blues singer in having such a sweet voice, but he was also untypical of any musician, really, in being extremely precise about detail.
You're listening on our public feed, which includes a shortened version of this episode. To hear the extended version and get access to our bonus shows, become an FM Plus subscriber. Sign up in Apple Podcasts or at fmpods.com.
He seemed to have been blind from birth and yet uncannily good at moving around the world and being independent. And when he moved to Atlanta in 1927, when he made his first record, you know, he got an apartment. He got a telephone so that he could get booked into professional gigs and so on. A really remarkable, independent guy. And his recording, well, there's a lot of it, and some of it's not so good. But the early blues stuff he did for Victor Records is scintillating.
So the book spends 10 or 15 pages on McTell, both not so much biography as you do in your other book, but the songs and the influences that perk up in Dylan. So you kind of, the chapter goes from McTell to Dylan, and the second two-thirds is Dylan back to McTell.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it isn't until 1993 that Dylan records a McTell song, Broke Down Engine Blues, which is on World Gone Wrong. But before that, you know, even in the Born Again phase, he brings a little phrase of McTell's into one of the songs. He sings about this woman, his woman, who she can really do the Georgia crawl. That phrase, she can really do the Georgia crawl, straight out of a McTell song, a secular song, of course. And even Lay Across My Big Brass Bed is from a Ruth Willis pre-war blues track, which has McTell singing in the background and playing the guitar. And it's called Rough Alley Blues. So it's, you know, he really knew that stuff early on, and and he plucks it out and uses it in many of the songs of his own. Yeah.
Let's listen to another excerpt from Song and Dance Man, Volume 2.
As the British blues expert Simon Napier wrote in sleeve notes to an album of McTell's later work, quote, "He sounds like no other artist, nor does he apparently subscribe to the trends set by other artists," unquote. And, quote, "He has the compelling, dramatic voice of the best bluesmen, coupled with the wit and imagery of the greatest folk poet," unquote. All of which sounds sort of familiar. Blind Willie McTell, like Bob Dylan, is a complex, intelligent, articulate personality and artist. And behind Dylan's great song reverberates a thorough knowledge of McTell's exquisite work. And, I think, Dylan's sense of a deep companionship of spirit between them. McTell's life is the stuff of exactly the sort of troubadour romance Bob Dylan fantasized for himself in his early years and has carried in his heart ever since. McTell is the blues singer Dylan would have been if he'd been born in time.
You point out that relative to the song, there are a lot of reasons he chose Blind Willie McTell to be the namesake of the song, perhaps not least of which is it's a better rhyme than some of his contemporaries.
Yeah, it would be very hard to rhyme "No One Can Sing the Blues Like Robert Johnson." That would be hard. Yeah, and so McTell works well. But of course, it's also, he likes the pun of Tell on in McTell, you know. It's part of saying how eloquent McTell is. That telling is in his very name, if you like. Not that Willie ever pronounced it that way. His family pronounced it McTeer. His real name was McTeer, which is, there are 37 different spellings of that in the Georgia area, white and black McTeers. But the usual one is MC and then TIER. But the way that they say it, McTeer, is exactly like McTell, you know. So that's how he becomes McTell. So Dylan's, one of the main things about Dylan's song, Blind Willie McTell, is about McTell's articulacy, isn't it? No one can sing the blues like this. And of course, in terms of technically of the voice, no one does. No one else sounds like Blind Willie McTell. But, you know, it goes deeper than that, doesn't it? I mean, he's talking about McTell's ability to create a requiem, if you like, to pay tribute to what's lost, to what's gone.
Yeah, I find that phrase, it's a little bit like we spoke of last time with Joker Man, that it's a phrase that's spit out repeatedly through the song that means worlds. And the literacy of this line, "No one sings the blues like Blind Willie McTell," like you say, the first thing you do is, oh, I got to hear this guy. And you do think magic is going to come out of the speaker. And as you say, it's beautiful, but it's different. It's clear that's not the singular point.
Right.
And I also think this is a similarity in the songs that, and I'd love to hear what you think about this, that the verses are related to McTell, but they're also, as you point out through this chapter, worlds bigger. And he's just the chorus, or it's not even a chorus, it's just a repeated line throughout the song, is serving this other purpose of refocusing and representing everything that couldn't be said.
And it's refocusing on the loss, using the blues as you know, a form of lamentation, where it is a lamentation, and he's paying tribute to McTell's ability to sing a lamentation, but as you say, he's Dylan is bringing in a huge range of things into this song, you know, the arrow on the doorpost, many martyrs falling in East Texas. There's just loads of stuff in this. These are all things which are lamentable, if you like.
So before we start in on the on some of those verses and some of the allusions and references, let's talk, as we have before, about the overall, because I think, you know, the songs that you've chosen to focus on full chapters that we've talked about a bunch, there is a pattern here that these are songs that are just, you know, this is a song that I think you don't have to dive deeply into to feel like it's special, meaning it just sounds interesting and compelling. It's highly differentiated, even in the vastness of Dylan's catalog. Yes. It feels important before you know anything else about it. It really is a special song before introspection.
Absolutely, it is. And I think I say in the book that it's the most important spooky song since Elvis Presley's Heartbreak Hotel. And that's something to do with the sound quality, isn't it? As well as the mysteriousness of the narrative. As you say, you can hear it without at all worrying about what it means. And it does strike you immediately as a special thing.
So the transition in the book between the McTell biography and history and the various connections between him and Dylan and the meat of the song is the evolution, if you will, from what you call the rake cycle history to St. Jane's Infirmary into this song. So maybe you can share a condensed version of, this is a literal connection between Blind Willie and the song beyond his name being in it.
There's a cycle of songs called The Unfortunate Rake. And this starts out as an English folk song. It's very old, but it isn't first recorded or even written down by any researcher until far later. But it's an English folk song, and it's found in Ireland and England, and it crosses to America. And in America, what happens is that it branches out into white and black versions. And the white versions include The Streets of Laredo and The Bad Girl's Lament. And the black versions include St. James Infirmary Blues and a song by Blind Willie McTell called The Dying Crapshooter's Blues. Although they, you know, on the face of it, don't sound all that much as if they're the same sort of song, they all have this set of core ingredients. And Dylan seems to understand that this is the case, whichever of them he has been listening to, and he probably listened to all of them. First of all, they share the centrality of burial. The song is always a story, and it's a story in which someone is dying, or in the case of the Dylan song, everything is dying. Dying is central to each song, and then the structure of all of them is based on there being two narrators, not just one. You get the first narrator who is telling the story, and what he or she thinks is that he was walking wherever in Laredo somewhere in Ireland, wherever you're walking. This first narrator is walking along and meets a tragic dying figure and tells their story. Tells their story in the dying figure's words so that we hear the voice of the second person. In the case of the Dylan song, the first narrator is just an owl, and the second narrator is saying he hears the owl, just like in the other songs, someone hears the dying person. I heard that hoot owl singing as they were taking down the tents. The stars above the barren trees was his only audience. But it wasn't, was it? Because it was also heard by the person who sings the rest of the song, who starts with, "I heard that hoot owl singing."
The book does a wonderful job of as close as you come throughout the volumes, I think, to covering every verse, because there's so much there, and they're compact, even though there's a fair number of them. Let's just talk about a few of the lines that ring out for a minute.
Okay.
You talk a bit about those charcoal gypsy maidens strutting their feathers well.
Yeah, isn't that a great line? I mean, that's just, and quite a brave line, because, you know, the excessively woke police could be on him for that. It's charcoal maidens strutting their feathers well. I mean, but you know, what does it evoke apart from the loveliness of the line itself, of the sheer beauty of the phrasing? What it evokes is a particular kind of medicine show showbiz, isn't it? It's part of that history of the ways in which Black Americans had to get by.
And it's interesting that rather pleasant evocation immediately precedes the plantations burning, cracking whips, and slavery ships. So we have a hard left turn juxtaposition there.
Yeah, well, he goes, you know, those who survived the slavery ships and land in America, or of course in the West Indies, those who land in America, their slavery continues a very long time. And one of the ways out of slavery and the extremely racist regime that follows it, in which Blind William McTell lived his entire life, one of the ways out of that for a resourceful Black person was, if you like, the entertainment industry.
Then you point out that the next verse is about the tribes a-moaning, which you point out again, we leave the continent and go somewhere else, perhaps, in the illusion.
Well, and also, of course, as Dylan has done in other songs, he makes a parallel, doesn't he, between the tribes of Israel, the tribes of in the Old Testament, and the tribes of Black Americans, the tribes of Africans brought somewhere else. I mean, he does it in on the Christian album.
Unfortunately, that's all we have time for here in the public feed. If you'd like to hear the rest of this episode and get access to extended and bonus episodes from this and all of the other shows on the network, become an FM Plus subscriber. Sign up in Apple Podcasts or at fmpods.com.
Did you enjoy this show? Then please rate this podcast and leave a review. It really helps. Also, sign up for 7 days, our free weekly newsletter that puts all the top Bob Dylan news and links into your inbox every Sunday. Use the link in the show notes. Thanks for listening.